to stay safe, the most important is all the time to keep attention. I know so many people just catch on the fishing sites, and even the security experts, they are catched on fishing sites.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 22nd episode of Colors of Web3 and Entrepreneurship. My name is Lum, your Web3 host today. And here I am today with Peter, who is the co-founder and CEO of Auxorio. Peter, can you give a quick introduction about yourself?
Yes, hello. Yes, my name is Peter. I'm in the crypto since 2000 and more than 15 years in IT, programming, information security, and all these things. So, yeah, now currently we are working with the top tier projects like LIDA, 1inch, and other. Mostly now we are focusing on ZKA based solutions and do security audits. So actually we help to save the money for and protect the protocols against the hackers. Nice to be there, Lem.
Awesome. Yeah, sounds like a lot of things that you guys are doing. Before we, you know, talk about the main topic, which is your company and what you do, I actually want to get to know you a little bit as a person. Can you share with us your professional background, maybe since the, you know, since your first job or whatever timeline you think appropriate leading up to the current position and how you came to the current company?
Yeah, actually, it started like 2000 when I won the first hackathon and won the first prize, and Vitalik Buterin
nice.
Rewarded
awesome.
Me.
By the way, which hackathon was this?
I don't even remember. It was before, I think, ETH Global Hackathons. The
yeah,
series.
For sure.
Yeah.
OG. Yeah.
Yeah. And we just create some tokenized model on Ethereum. It was like maybe even before ICO era happening. So
yes.
it was like my first smart contracts that I started to write. But it was nice. So after that, there was too much attention actually to my things because ICO era started to grow in and we start to work with the tokenization protocols and do I get together all my OGs from university who were very good in cryptography and mathematics. So now they all mostly all of them are working in different kind of companies, Web3 companies, and most of them are founders of the companies. One of them is co-founder of Tornado Cash, another one also working with ZK things. Core wow. team in 1inch also is my first employees that I hired at that time. Yeah, so that's how it started. And then we, together with my co-founder Alex Lasov, we created ZK Sync, like we create Matter Labs. First, we start to work on Plasma protocols. Later, we switched to ZK and decided to scale Ethereum in more trusted way by ZK. And now it gets like mainstream, everyone using ZK for that. So, and I am switched to the new things that I'm curious is a security, because I see there is a lack of good security audits. So I built the Rockstar team that can do and find almost any bugs. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
That's how it happens. Mm. And as a side project, yeah, I helped to 1inch make their Web3 wallet. I also made my mobile library to work with the mobiles and interact with Web3. So I also take a grant from Ethereum Foundation for these things. Now we are also in the free time working as a grants for ZK privacy things for Gnosis chain, for example, for multisigs to bring some more privacy to multisig signs and so on. So this is just like R&D stuff that always going on the background with the main company.
Interesting.
Yeah. And also during this time, I think I came to other hackathons. After that, when I won that hackathon, I won also maybe 11 or 12 other ETH global hackathons. So I won maybe 12 from 14 hackathons that I participated.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just nice to keep yourself in fit to see what's where the market is going. And this is just
so for
nice.
All these hackathon, right? You definitely you build like, is it a completely new product that you build, or is it something that out of your personal interest, out of curiosity, or some like new feature for existing product?
So usually in hackathons is they encourage to build something new, not just to improve some features in already built protocols.
Yes.
So yeah, mostly something new, some prototypes of new ideas. But it depends. Sometimes like we just create some more cryptography things. Sometimes we improve some protocols or make a proof of concept. For example, we made chess game on Snarks before any recursive Snarks was available on the market. So it was quite challenging. But
interesting. How does that work? A chess game on Snag? I know Snag is one type of ZK, but how does it work? Do people play with each other, play with computers, or?
Yes, so you make a move, make a commitment, and then you send this commitment to the server, and by recursive snark you can provide all your moves. But more interesting thing when we there is nothing to hide actually. More interesting when we make the game, how it's named, when you fire by the ships on a hidden map on other
I know that game.
You have to commit your positions of your ships, but
yes,
you shouldn't reveal it to the opponent, but you have to prove that he gets into the right point or not. So you can do it by snarks, and
okay,
you can do it recursively and increment each move by sending back the proof to your opponent. So that was most interesting alternative for this game. Yeah,
interesting. So basically for chess, you don't really, do you even need ZK then? Because if you don't, you said there's nothing to prove.
For chess, mostly no. Sometimes you can prove that you know how to win in specific combination, but yeah, this is a not good case. Like much more interesting case is when with this battlefield, when you have
partnership or something like that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because you hid them from each other. Okay. Yeah, I think that makes perfect sense. Awesome. Can you share with us what besides Web3? I know you're very much involved in Web3, and you've been in Web3 for like more than seven years already. But outside of Web3, what do you do for fun? What's your hobbies?
Fun, mostly currently, of course, as many people, I am interesting and curious what happening in AI, and sometimes play with the models, try to train them and see if it's possible to use it also if for Audis as well. But now looks like the models are not ready, because in Audis you have to take a lot of context, keep in mind, and models can do this. And do a lot of stuff like traveling in slow nomad style. So currently I'm in Vietnam. Yes, and do kitesurfing things later. Go to other places, maybe to explore the area, and do diving, free diving, surfing, mountain biking, some active sports. This is usually what I do if I'm not sitting on the laptop.
That's awesome. Yeah, it sounds like a fully digital nomad, right? Just moving around between Asia.
Yes,
and
mostly in Asia. And
I feel like Asia is probably the best place for, I mean, there's many cities in Asia that are really suited for the life of digital nomads, right? I mean, including my country, Vietnam, obviously, but then also you have Bangkok, Thailand, Chiang Mai, there's Malaysia, I think, and then
is the most popular destinations for digital nomads. So it depends. If I want more community and networking, so I can go to Bangkok and Chiang Mai and to the big cities. Sometimes I just like to relax on like Koh Phangan on small island and just do my own stuff. So it depends on the mood where I'm going. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, basically live your life the way you like. Yeah, well, without further ado, let's go ahead and maybe deep dive into your company that you're building at the moment. Auxorio, feel free to share your screen if you have any. So
let me get a small intro of what we are doing. So here we go. Yeah, this is our company, we build it with my co-founder Alex, and this is like a small boutique audit company, and we hire like the top tier auditors on the market that I know. So we're very small, but try to do our best to provide the best quality audits. Mm. So that's
why. When you say small boutique, how many people exactly?
Well, we have 10 auditors and 5 back office guys, like from business development relationship, marketing, and so on. So yes, we have a bunch of services, like from classic smart contract audits. We can also help to prepare the code for audits, like do code review and consult. Sometimes like companies come to us and they're not ready for audits, for example. Sometimes they say they want audit, but when we start to do audit, we find there are so many issues and there is no reason to spend the money for audit because it's quite expensive, and we provide them and guide them how to build the security solution to prepare to audit. So we can also provide penetration testing, so we can cover the security, everything around the smart contracts, for example, for oracles or off-chain parts and so on. So one of the most interesting thing that we now working on is zero knowledge solutions. We do some prototyping of the new zero knowledge solutions and help to secure and audit already existing one. So we have a team that already familiar with many security protocols built on Circom and Kyra. So we are now is our main focus is zero knowledge solutions. So, and sometimes we do formal verification, especially if it's a quite complex protocol and they need to cover specific functions in with to be sure that it works as expected, and it's not enough to cover by tests. We can do formal verification or fuzzing for the protocols. And sometimes incident reports, it's mostly like sometimes VCs come to us to check what happens in some protocol, or we can do due diligence and check even if there is no incident, and do due diligence private audits for VCs if they want to know what the actual status of the project and how secure and complete it is. So yeah, that's how we work also with the other side from for VCs. Sometimes we do audits for projects and help them to bring more money from VCs, and sometimes we help to VCs to check the status of projects. We secure we work with the bridges, with DeFi, liquid staking protocols, yeah. We cover so many things. Also, recently we found in one of the stablecoin, we found there is a pool for staking of stablecoin. We found a bug after 3 years in production. I can't say which exactly the protocol it is. Hmm. And they ask us to not reveal it now, but that was quite a surprise for me, because it was after 3 big company audits provided in the production for 3 years, and we found a critical bug that they accept. So,
well, that's quite, I mean, that's really awesome for your team, I'm sure. But then I'm curious, like, how did, like, what was it that the other big companies was missing, but then your team found it? Did you guys just, how did you discover it?
How can we discover it? Yeah. Actually, we audit another protocol that's similar to that. And we thought, okay, if we found this bug in this protocol, let's check what happens in other protocols. Probably they're also vulnerable for the same issue. And actually we found some of them are vulnerable. So we just did the audit for one of our clients. And then we found that we can also hack in other protocols by the same approach. That's how it works. Yeah, so we have very good statistics for now, like 0 hacks after our audits, like no smart contracts have been hacked yet.
That's really impressive. Yeah. So these are like company or companies or contract that you have already audited, right? And so far,
yeah, so
until now.
Yeah, and most of actually, in all of our audits, we found something. There is a no. I don't remember even one audit, even for a, with a very good quality code, like 1 inch. They are provide very high quality code, but even in their code, we found something to fix. So yeah, usually clients are very happy that they say, "Wow, we never thought about that," and we show them how to make the, their code even better and secure. Yep. So this how it looks like. We
so you can have a big name over there, Lido, right? Lido
V2. Yeah, Lido as well. A big name, so yeah, they're now we're in very close interaction with Lido. They have a huge team. They, that was one of the, our biggest audit, and it was for 2 months, and our company was fully into this audit for, yeah, we spend a lot of time and make special approach how to audit so big a scope like LiDAR, because it's very hard to even realize how it works. And to audit, you need to do a special approaches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you audit Lido, I'm curious now, like, are all the code public? All of it public? Or is there some like private code repository as well that they share with you?
So for now, everything is public. Yes. So everything that we audit, like, you can find in public. But that during audit, usually they provide it internally.
Okay. So there's also some private repository, right?
Yes, after audit is done, so they are provide everything in public. So it's a good practice for most of the Web3 companies. They provide all the code and everything is open source, but not all of them.
Yeah.
Some of them prefer to keep it private.
Makes sense. And then for Lido V2, this is a concept, actually. Yes. I would like to have you explain, how does a protocol or the smart contract upgrade, right, from V1 to V2, how does it work? Maybe can you explain?
Actually, it's quite hard to explain in short time. So we already start to do case study. We will create maybe 3 or 4 articles explaining how LiDAR protocol works. So I think it's better to check them. We will provide it in our blog. So there is a first article. It's about history of LiDAR, how it.
Okay. So this is like V1, right? This is talking about V1, right?
Yes. And I think in next week we will provide the second part about V2, and we explain how it works, how it's related to proof of stake algorithm, and how it works on low level. And for example, if you want to become a staker, what you have to know about this protocol, or if you want to be a validator, what you have to know about this protocol. And we also will do some case studies, like from our reports, we will see what can happen and how LiDAR protect from these potential attacks. So everything will be in these articles. So we try to provide this information and share it with the community as well, everything that we will found. So
that's awesome. So actually, wow, this is very comprehensive. Yeah, I'm just briefly taking a glance at it now. I'll make sure to put the link in the show notes here so people can actually read it and follow. Wow.
Yeah, sure.
Seems very comprehensive.
Yeah. So we can also check, like, also we try to improve our experience with the developers. So we create interactive audits form. So if we go to audits, so there is an interactive version of our report. So, and you can easily find all the bugs and sort them by status or severity. And if you click on some issue, you can see all details, like file, location where you find some description, recommendation how to fix. And during audits, you can do interaction here. So there is a response. So when they fixed, they just say, "Hey, we fixed that." So we start to audit, do our next step, like do re-audit of what they fixed and so on. So yeah, now it becomes much easier and more intuitive than rather than there is a hundred of bugs, and when you have to interact in chat, it becomes quite messy. So with this tool, our audits become much more neat and clean. So we're happy to provide some tools like this.
So this is also public, right? People can also see it, right?
Yeah, sure. It's audits.oxford.io. Yeah. You can go there and see all our audits. So, of course, we have a private section for ongoing audits, but everything that we already finished and commit, so everything is here. It's public.
What is Polygon PR69? It's the first time I heard of this.
Yeah. So this is just update, like LIDAR on Polygon, we also audit. And we check that everything on pull request that they did, everything is correct. So
pull request 69. Okay, got it.
PR 69 is pull request. It was JumpGit, first one. Here we found some major things.
What is JumpGit, by the way? I haven't heard of this name.
It's a bridge to Polygon.
Okay. From Ethereum?
Yeah.
So this is a major error, right? Actually, this is a good one. Can you explain what is this major issue here?
If talk about severity, like it's a lot of talks about like what you have to name, like major or warning or info and so on. So mostly if we mark it as major, like here, it makes some, you can break the protocol or steal some money from there. And that will
scary.
You can make some action that caused the losing of money. So for example, here the transaction will be reverted if you will send some kind of tokens. So it's quite clear explained here. Yes, and it's just common thing like that. You have to use safe transfer method instead of transfer to prevent this. So this is quite easy thing.
I see. Yeah. Probably it's easy for your companies. You've been looking at like hundreds
Some of the issues is easy to fix. Like you can just change one line. And sometimes you have to refactor the whole protocol and architecture to fix some things. So it really depends on the protocols, of the architecture.
Can you show an example of something that's critical? So there's one more level above major, right? I suppose.
Yes. Let me check. I think they are in our... here is a critical, I think it's quite hard without context, like to go into and
find. Is there a context here?
But in general, we found that recover function do incorrect calculations, so they recover less. You can bring your money from the of staked matics.
So meaning, do you get more money or do you get less money?
Less money.
Oh, less money. Okay.
Is there even a transfer one? Transfer lost matic. Yeah, so any wrong calculations is critical, no matter is it harm for users or for protocol, but this is not that we expect. So this is that should be done and fixed.
I see. Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you guys use some tools? For, oh, wow. This one has so many
critical. If we go, sometimes it's like this. So in the, for this protocol, there are so many criticals and they have to fix a lot of things.
Hmm.
Yeah, but there are criticals. They're quite easy to fix. So you can check. And if our listeners want to check, they want to come to see. Sure. If they have any questions, they can always come to us. Usually we do it mostly for developers.
I see. Yeah. I mean, I do have some developers watching this as well too. So for those of you who are curious, feel free to write your question down in the comment. I'll make sure to relay them to Peter. So he his team can answer later.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, there's quite a lot. Like, I mean, this list is not comprehensive, right? There's probably more than these.
So this is it's a huge project, and that's why we found a lot of things that have to be done. It's ongoing project like for half a year, so like this. Sometimes it's quite fast, so we can do it in 2-3 weeks. Sometimes it takes months.
So when clients they come to you, do they give you like a scope of like, hey, we want to check this, or do you guys just take a free rein? You just help them decide which part you want to audit, or
everything starts with their request. Like we have a form for they have just need to provide the repository and the scope. And we check and get them estimations, like how much it costs and how long does it takes to take this audit. Also, now we currently run out of the free slots, so like for the next couple of months we have a lot of work. So now they have to book in advance.
Oh,
because the issue is when usually when the projects they come to us, usually they want the audit to do it tomorrow.
I don't think this is like kind of like I don't know like Uber expedite your requests or stuff like that, right? This actually I think takes a lot of time and effort, especially if you like have to understand I guess you all have to understand how it works from the business side but also understand the technical side both, right?
Of course. Yeah. So first have to check the economical part of the project. We check how it works, and like we cover all the things, not only just technical things, in the business side. And then when we do audits, we combine our auditors in the special teams. We check their skills, who is more suitable for that project, and also different auditors here. Different approaches for audits, so we try to combine different auditors with different approaches, so it gets much better results. So if everyone can do his own way, and then they do cross check with each other and find everything by this.
So I guess one type of smart contract or one repo probably need to have a few people looking at it, right?
So we have cross check, like auditors check the projects in parallel, then they do cross check of their findings. If the scope is huge, so they do it in parallel in several teams, do it. If the scope is not too big, so usually all auditors check all the code at once. But of course, they have some interactions. They help to each other to understand how it works, and we are very in close interaction with the developers all the time. So this is just Hard work. How you have to, in very short time, you have to understand the whole project, how it works, and
yeah.
find all the things. So you have to think like a hacker, like not a developer. So auditors and developers they have very different approaches. So because developers have to build, hackers have to break the things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think they exist together, right? Obviously, yeah.
Yes, yeah, but usually you have to, you need a different skills to be a good developer and good auditor. Auditors usually they write the code quite slow, but very secure. And for developers, usually the requirements that they have to build what client needs in the short time. So the better when they are work together. So auditors build, we fix the issues, they quickly fix them, and then they can release the secure protocol.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I actually never thought about that, but yeah, totally makes sense. And then do you guys use some certain tools for when you do your audit?
Yeah, so for the tools, of course, we do some static check analysis, but usually we say to our clients that is better if they do pre-audit checks and do their tools by themselves, because they don't need auditors for that, and they can save our time and money in their money for that, and we mostly focus it on manual checks because most of the most interesting things you have only manual checks can be reveal the most important things. The static analysis, they just cover the most obvious things, and our task is to find something hidden and not expected things. But of course, like we do some like tools for audits and checks as well.
I see. Well, you mentioned about like TAM and pricing. I'm actually quite curious. Is there like a from rate to, you know, like what does it begin from? I never order an audit, so I don't even know what is is there a price range? how big is the project? Things like that. Yeah. Feel free to share if there's anything. Yeah.
Yes. So in general, like price range per week for in general for audits, it's like there are three tiers of auditors. Like top tier, like tier one, it's like Consensus, Trail of Beats, Nethermind, like the biggest companies. They charge like 30,000-40,000 per week for a team.
That's so, US dollars.
US dollars. Yes.
Wow.
So. So for the tier two, it's about 15 to 25 per week for our team. So and tier three is just like some like mostly no name. It's like sometimes it's below the 10,000 per week. So and I can say like we try to provide the service like tier one, and we are in range of like tier two for the pricing. But yeah, it's quite hard to do competition here, because if you hire the good high quality auditors, it's quite expensive things. So yeah, I think this price can seems like very high. For just like 1 week, you have to pay several, like $10 to $20, for example.
Yeah.
But it's worth of it. And now I realize that it's not a big price. If you do your job very well and not save money for auditors, because sometimes some companies provide only one auditor, for example, and they can save a lot of money for auditors. Then there is a big probability that you will miss something. And we are very passionate about the security and quality and try to provide the best service, like and zero hawks after hours. That's the price. So, yeah. So this is approximately how the price range now is works on Audi field.
Interesting. Yeah, actually, that's the first time. Thanks for sharing the insights. Yeah, first time I heard of this. So.
Yeah.
By the way, how did you come up with the name of the company? I mean, I know 0x is like the beginning of the, you know, like wallet address, right? In Web3. What does 0x Oreo mean?
Yeah. So, 0x is mostly it's like for hex. All the hex digits start from this. It's not something specific. It's just a Axorio. I just create. Find something that looks nice, sounds nice, and there is a different symbols inside. There is, you can find the XOR. This is one of the most common logical operation for cryptography. So it's like XOR inside. In EIO, in the end, it's like input output. So
yeah.
There is a lot of different hints.
yeah, that makes sense. Okay, now that you pointed out, yeah, it makes sense. Okay, now that you pointed out, I see input output, I see OR, right, which is a very important operator. I see XOR as well, right? XOR.
XOR, yeah, yes, XOR. And 0x as well. So
yeah, everything. 0x as well. So, yeah.
Wow. And in general, so it sounds good and very easy to remember. So that's how it.
Interesting. Fascinating. So when you say that your user client come to you and bring to you the project and expect that, hey, finish this in a couple of days, right? So I guess that's one of the challenges, like TAM. But what are some of the other challenges facing your company besides having to produce results in very short period of time?
So usually we don't do like in short period of time because it's also you can't do high quality audit in short period of time. Yeah. So and it's sometimes quite challenging to manage so many projects and simultaneously provide high quality audits because we don't want to do any compromise with the quality. And the challenging thing, I think it's about the load balance. Sometimes we have a lot of free time to do research. Usually it happens in the summertime. Everyone go for vacations and there are not too many audits comes to us. And sometimes before the new year, usually everyone want to deploy and everyone in rush want to do audit as soon as possible. So this load balance is quite challenging thing sometimes.
Yeah.
But since we always have something that we want to be done, so we do some researches if we have free time. We can apply for some grants or participate in some hackathons. There wasn't a time when we didn't know what to do. It's everything.
Yeah.
We will find something to do.
That's true. And I think with the pace of new things, new protocol, new concepts, right, coming out in the Web3 world, I'm pretty sure that you guys will not run out of time. By the way, curious, are you only doing, is it mainly Solidity or any other type of contract? I don't know.
Solana, yeah, so Rust, now we start to work with the Rust and Circom, so mostly for ZK. Things, it's Rust or Cairo. This is the most interesting part. And of course, we can do some Solana code on Rust or Near or Substrate, we can also do audits. Yeah, but to be honest, we don't have too much expertise there. There are not too many projects come with these requests. So it's quite So most of the time we can provide them a code review or like some recommendations and consulting services. But for audits, yeah, it's quite hard to do this because there are not too many projects that come in for audits. Maybe in Solana now they are start to take more attention to audits, but not on others.
I see. That's cool.
So yeah, but for ZK, I think this is a very trendy things, and more ZK projects are coming and going live. And actually to write the high quality and secure ZK code is quite hard, even on like simple libraries like Circom. There are so many issues that you have to know because they are not common and not the same as in like traditional programming. And not in smart contracts, not in other languages. So that's the most
One thing I want to know about ZK, why are there so many different like libraries and language specific for ZK? Do you have an explanation why there's so many?
Yeah, because you have to work in very low level cryptographic primitives. We work with the input-output things. You have to know how hashes works, how hash collisions works, what happens with overflow, underflow, because you actually work with the actual raw data most of the time with the signals, and it's very easy to find some under constrained circuits. So it means like if you not check some of the corner cases, it can lead the total fail of the whole circuit. So usually it doesn't happen in the normal programming languages. And here you have to check almost every single line of code. And they behave in different way. And in Circom and ZK, you have to work with the like with the just basic primitive mathematical operations. There is no ready like some sort filtering solutions, and it's very easy to get some mistake when you build it from the scratch.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense. So I guess the lower level the language, the more primitive the code, right? And then the more I guess you would have to check in a way. Right?
Yeah. It's not as hard as like work with assembler, for example, but it's just little bit upper level. Anyway, you work with the raw data and primitives and bit marks and bit fields, and it's very easy to make some mistakes there. And you do these things manually.
Interesting. And which one is in terms of speed? I know like some of the ZK like. Maybe some of the circuits takes such a long time to do the operation and then do the verification. So which one do you think right now is like relatively good? Is it fast enough yet for general usage?
So for the last few years, I think Circom is the best solution for writing circuits because they already ported everything to WASM and it works at the same speed as the other solutions based on Rust and C++, like Zocrats and others. Here, more interesting question, like what kind of proving system you have to pick, because they are working in very different ways. Some of them support recursive solutions, like that's what now AdStack working like on their Noir protocol, so they provide some recursions in their language. So it depends of the needs. If you want just basic things like Circom and Growth16, most well known and good proving system works great. But if you need some more advanced stuff, so sometimes you have to go with a Halo, Plonky, and other proving systems. But all of them have some very specific things that you have to know. Like, it's very hard to explain. Like now, but if you go deeper and, like, for example, yeah, if company come to us and say, hey, I want to do this and this, like, can you help us? How can we build this and what to use? Then we can go deeper and check and do all the calculations. What will be on which language is easier to write, which proving system to use, and so on.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. Quite a lot of different options, I suppose. Yeah, and I think that's a good segue now. Thanks for sharing the screen to move into the third section. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Web3 security in general. And then, so I think the first question here that I think be quite interesting for a lot of users is that, what are some of the common misconceptions that people have regarding Web3 security?
Misconception? So now I see the trends of, yeah. First is, like, you can't do audit of your own code. So
you cannot.
It's, and if we help, if our auditors help to write the code, they are never audit the code they write by themselves. It's very important that, like, the code audited by someone who didn't take any participation in building this solution, because when you're building it, you put yourself in some boxes, and it's very hard to think outside of this box. And it's very important when you do security audit to look at these things from other sides. That's the one, like, another. Yeah. So the very basic things, we say some things like smart contracts are automatically secure. It's not. I think, okay, now we already know that it's not like this. There are so many hacks. And another thing is privacy is guaranteed by in Web3. Actually, it's not. But this is misconceptions, maybe was actual maybe 5 years ago, when everyone saw thought that everything is private and secure. Actually, it isn't.
And people think ZK is an equal privacy, right? But it's not.
Exactly. Yeah. Now the same thing with ZK, exactly. But ZK is not about the privacy by default. Unless they commit this, like Tornado Cash or Monero, or Monero is not on ZK, for Zcash. But even in Zcash, sometimes thinking that it's private, but it isn't. To make a private transaction in Zcash, you have to do special shielded transaction. Just if you are just using Zcash, it doesn't make your transaction private. So this is very important to remember. And also about the privacy, there are so many different ways to track your trace outside of the blockchain. So also you have to remember about these things. So now I see the trends that people go for security audits for bug bounties. Bug bounties doesn't guarantee anything. I know and talk with so many security auditors, and they say that in bug bounty, you work in completely different approach. You don't try to find anything. You try to find as much as possible to get your bug bounty, the biggest part of your bounty. And when auditors work in this concept, this approach, they are, don't care, like, to provide the 100% security of the code. So it's...
Because they only care about the bounties, yeah.
Yes, so you should never substitute. It's completely wrong approach and leads to so many problems. Of course, bug bounty can provide more. It's cheaper and provides more some low sovereignty issues. But usually you pay much more. So people say that they spend most of the time to build and complete their reports with very obvious issues. And so they spend their time, they are working very limited amount of time because bug bounty usually they are limited, and everyone try to write as much as possible. and it's really make their qualities much lower, because we have a special tools, and we build our process in the way when auditors don't spend time for building reports, because we have all the system that automate these things, and they know how to split their time to provide the best quality and be 100% sure they cover everything. In bug bounty, they are never guarantee that. Everyone just try randomly pick something and find something there. So yeah, this approach can lead so many bad consequences later. So, but we will see. But I see sometimes people say, like, oh, we will not gonna do audits, we will just do bug bounties. So I think it's totally wrong approach. And the auditors say, yes, we can provide the best quality, but we are working for just make money for us. So that's their intention. So people have to understand this.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I never thought about that too. Yeah, usually I thought that about the, you know, I guess. But now that I know, they're not like substitute, right, for each other. That's the point you're trying to make. Yeah, they maybe go hand in hand or complements, but yeah, you can't really just do bug bounty and then say that hey, we're good because we found all the bugs, but apparently you still need a audit.
Yeah.
Interesting insights.
Yeah, but in general, the education community and developers about these misconceptions is crucial part for improving overall security of Web3 and so on.
Yeah, certainly. So then I know like Web3 hacks are so some common. Actually, there's one thing I'm quite curious about. Like, why are I think all the statistic about all the hacks that I've seen, I think breaches are like the easiest place to hack. Any reason why? Why are breaches so easy to hack?
Breaches, because they're quite complicated and there are so many things that rely on oracles and off-chain part. So they are built so many things that just knew and nobody did it before. And that's why they are quite vulnerable. So actually, I think the era of the breaches, like breach hacks, is already past. But when some new technology comes to the market, usually it's not secure because nobody knows like what kind of potential approach you can use to hack it. And it's quite complicated system in general. So I think the most secure breaches is atomic breaches, but I never saw them before. But I think later we will see more atomic breaches that will go to the market.
Can you explain what does atomic market, what does it mean? First time I heard about this.
I mean, like the way when you can interact by providing information from one blockchain to another and just bypass some actions that have to be done by oracles. Of course, someone have to transfer this information from one blockchain to another and back. But you have to build the system in the way when you don't need to rely on the, is it true or not that some oracle said, or if some malfunction of oracle. So to be able to transfer information about the money back and forward without any rely on the third party services. I think this, there are already some prototypes of that things like how you can bridge, for example, Bitcoin and Ethereum. So I think we will see it in the near future. Okay.
Interesting. So basically anything that bridge from Ethereum to Bitcoin would be considered atomic bridge?
Yeah, I think I don't see any reason why it's not possible to do this, but I'm just surprised that nobody did it before. So let's see. Maybe it's just not the time, but I think it will happen soon.
Very, very interesting, actually. You probably might have seen or heard of, there's a lot of the new craze over BRC20, right? And then, yeah, a lot of the, actually, I'll probably leave a link up here for one of the second episode of the Fireside Chat that I had with my colleague about BRC20. And then I think this year there will be, like 2024, there'll be some exciting development. And you know, with with the Bitcoin ecosystem being developed, the way I see it, I mean, most of the liquidity right now is still in Ethereum, right? So I'm pretty sure there will be some bridges. So I think it's probably about time now that there will be some sort of bridges being developed for this.
Yes, for sure. In general, I'm keep looking on the Bitcoin ecosystem, and they are developing quite fast. And there are so many new approaches happening. Like beside the Lightning, they start to build the smart contracts on the Lightning network. And it's quite interesting approach. It's just different because Lightning, they are not guarantee of immutability of these systems. And if you deploy your code on the Lightning node, and this node can just close the channels and disappear. But there is some security guarantees that you can just withdraw your money on the Bitcoin if this happens. So, but not too many people happy with this approach when like everything can just disappear in the moment. Yeah, that's
is it disappear because of a hacker pulling the string, or is it because like some other reason?
I think mostly because of malfunction of some node provider, for example.
Okay,
but there is no immutability in the Lightning network. That's why it's quite hard, because they can just disappear, and then you have to deal with this somehow and withdraw your money from this disappearing network. It's quite challenging and not intuitive how to do this. So I think it takes time to get to this approach. And the UX in Bitcoin is not good as in Ethereum for now. Even in Ethereum, there are a lot of things to improve.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think, and I mean, not to mention the fact that I think even the gas on Bitcoin is going to be much more expensive than even Ethereum layer one, I think, sometime. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
yeah,
and then,
sure.
Yeah, the, most of the wallets right now, very few wallets that work with Bitcoin also. Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah, but in general, yeah, I like to see how the Bitcoin community keep growing, and there are smart contracts happen. Now you can build your solutions with the smart contracts on Bitcoin. That's quite interesting and exciting.
Yeah, I actually I'm seeing some L2 layer tools right now, like coming out. I actually haven't seen the docs yet. I don't know. I think they probably some already have their docs out. I'm also quite curious actually, like what language do they use? Like, is it similar to Solidity, or do we need to learn something new? Yeah, I don't know. I don't have the answer, but yeah, I'm also quite excited to see some of the new development.
Yeah, I don't have a chance yet to try this code, but yeah, I know there is some ports of EVMs and Solidity, but most of them you just build on the scripts, on their own scripts, not just something that you get used in Ethereum.
Okay, cool. One general question here to maybe help out our non-technical user in general. How can users stay safe while navigating Web3 in general? Any tips or tools that they should use or you can share?
Yeah, okay, so to stay safe, the most important is all the time to keep attention. I know so many people just catch on the phishing sites, and even the security experts, they are catched on phishing sites. To tell the truth, even I just catch and on some phishing site when I just misclick Twitter on the wrong website. If I work in security, it happens. And how it happens, usually I found it's exactly the same thing. People are tired or they are in rush and don't pay attention to what they do. I try sometimes when you do several things simultaneously. For example, I try to compare several bridges and see what happens in different bridges, how much and how they transfer the money. And one of them was malicious. I just click from official Reddit of one project, and there was a top rated comment in Reddit, but it was a phishing link. So I just lose my attention, and I have to pay several thousand dollars for this. And most of these hacks happens when people just lose attention. if or in early morning when they are just woke up and they are not realize what they are doing, or in the late night when they just try to do something fix, for example, swap something fix or swap fast some and do some interactions, or they try to do it in rush. So that's the conditions where all most of the hacks, just like this stupid hacks, happens. So just to be pay attention to what are you doing. And you can do also install some wallets that can check and emulate transaction before executed. Rebi wallet and Zerion, they have some options that help you to keep secure, because now MetaMask, they not provide any information. It is very hard to guess what you are signing right now in MetaMask. Mm. I think there is also some snaps that you can install in MetaMask that can do these checks. Yeah, so I think this is also can help, but to be honest, I didn't check them yet.
So there's one wallet that I've tried recently. I think it's called Rabi Wallet. It's basically you can basically import any other wallets in there. And then I think the main difference that between that and MetaMask is that they do give you notice and warnings. For example, I think for the phishing site that you have gone to, they would have tell you like, hey, like there's some like maybe three warnings or two warnings, I don't know, just some big example. And then you have to click through, and then it will tell you like, hey, there's something wrong or fishy here. And then if you still click like, okay, I understand, click. Mm-hmm. So you have to click okay like twice, and then after that you can actually connect to it, right? So basically it's like a mechanism for it to prevent you from connecting with fishy sites or malicious sites.
Yeah, that's cool. I also heard a good reviews about Rebi Wallet. Yes. Mm. Of course, if it's new phishing site, so probably they didn't put it in their database. And I don't know, do they provide some security things? But I think it's very nice
I think they have a score, kind of. Yeah, and then for new site, there's no score, right? Zero score.
Exactly.
So basically, so they would tell you like, hey, are you sure you want to connect here versus that you connect to 1 inch? 1 inch is like very reputable, and then it's like, it's okay. No warning, but yeah.
Exactly. Mm. And if they provide some delay, so before you sign something that can cause losing of money, like permit or something, it's better to make some delay before you can just click once accidentally and just lose all your money. Yeah, so it's important to improve the UX. Rebi Wallet, I think they do a very important thing for that.
Yeah, so I tried out recently, actually, and I find that, okay, this is quite helpful, actually, because sometimes I also click on some random links. I think what you said for the top comment on Reddit, I'm assuming that's probably a bot, I'm guessing, right? Because lately I've seen a lot is on social media, right? They use bots to post random comments with malicious links, and all these bots, like they cross like each other, so then you see a lot of likes, but actually, it's not even real human just posting, just bots just spamming on servers, on social medias. And it's crazy. It's a problem that I don't know. I think bots is a big problem. Rabi Wallet. Anyway, check that out.
And also try to use the projects that passed the good audits. So that's also important.
That's true. So do not ape randomly into some random protocol that just launched yesterday.
And because usually audits, they provide also some warnings for the customers. For example, there is a centralization warning. For example, if some projects can do rug pull, of course, our auditors have to say, hey, there is some function that can withdraw all the money without any notice. And in audits, we always mention if there is some issues for the users as well, not only for the project itself. So that's why also it's very important to check audits. And for example, the project can just acknowledge this issue. They say, oh, okay, we know about that. But that's why it's also important. If you want to invest into the project, just check some audits from respectful auditors, and they for sure they will mention if there is some potential treats for the users as well.
Yeah, excellent point. Yeah, I think really for sure, like audited protocols much safer. I think in general, there's a few things that I've realized being in Web3 for quite a while now. I think audited protocols, these are some of the signs, right? That's a protocol is safer. They have been audited. The team is doxxed because anonymous teams are, you know, because they can just run away with stuff you are knowing, right? Maybe there's a few other signs. If they have been invested by some VC, but it's actually, it may not be a, there's also some rugs even with some investment as well, too, so that's not a sure sign. But usually, I think those two, I find that a dox team, teams that are not anonymous and audited, the two good signs. Yeah. And then if their code is public, so I think the third is if the code is public, also a good sign because they have nothing to hide. If they if the code is not public, that's can be scary because you don't know what you're interacting with.
Yeah, that's true.
And yeah, so for one question I like to ask for all of my guests, especially guests who are very deep into Web3. So we both know that security is a big problem in Web3, right? That many people, including developers like us, and need to fix, come up with something to help the build and fix. But what do you think are the factors necessary? What can we do, right, to help onboard maybe a billion people into Web3?
To get on board, I think for onboarding people to Web3, we have to use more crypto in our life, in our daily life. So I try to just pay in crypto when I can do this. And it's nice when I see when the people say, oh, wow, yes, I heard about crypto and I always want to use it, but I never know how to start to use it. And then I am really happy to just onboard them and show how can they start to use it. So I think that's the most important, like from people to people, if they will start to distribute this knowledge, it will get much more effect than just promotion or the price of the Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I can see that. So like peer to peer, right? With like peer pressure or like, you know, people are giving you, you know, I'm kind of imagining like similar to maybe, I think back in the early when Uber or maybe some other company first came out, right? They were like, hey, share this code and then oh, you and your friend get some credit or something, right? I mean, I don't know if that would be a, I don't know if that would be a good approach or not. I mean, right now we see a lot of like airdrops, right? And then for referrals, right? I mean, there's a huge wave of airdrops going on. I'm not sure if that's a right way or not.
But, yeah, well, it's nice, but I think it's more about like, it's just artificial way to bring people to the projects, but they usually don't stay longer. For airdrops, they just claim airdrops and then just go away. So there are so many airdrop hunters.
That's true. I think there's people who basically their full-time job is like hunting airdrops.
This is, I don't like it because it looks like you don't bring any value to the ecosystem when you just do this. It's like, for me, it's nice promotion technique. So that's it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I guess sometimes some of the airdrops, I think some airdrops are good if it's, you know, they have valid use case or rationale behind it. But I feel like a lot of the airdrops are kind of similar to the bots, right, that we encounter on social media, kind of like, hey, share this, post that, and then,
Course. It depends how you use it. So some of the airdrops really like make sense and they just did their work well and bring enough attention and OGs to the project. So of course, all the tools have, you can use tool in a good way and bad way. It depends.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Anyway, thanks for sharing the perspective on that. So let's see, two more questions here from my side before we wrap it up. I think one is that can you share any advice for people who want to get into becoming a security auditor or get into audit? What can they do?
Okay, so first you have to really understand that it's not easy and you have to have like specific qualities. You have like very precise thinking and you have to dig in each line of the code that you see. Like, it's not just like a building or like do development things. It's not the work for anyone. Not too many people can just stay focused on every single line so long. But if you're like this kind of person, so you can, there are so many lists I can also share with you, and you can share in the channel. There are some learning resources and videos how to become a good list of the most common issues and explain how you have to work to become auditor. And later you can go to some auditor's farm and or just participate in bug bounties in Sherlock or Code Arena and some other platforms and try to find first bugs. As soon as you can prove in real projects that you can find the bugs, you can go to participate in some good audit companies. Of course, if you go to Tier 1 companies, they have very challenging interviews. I know some of them, like ConsenSys, provide like 5 to 7 interviews before they get you onboarded. It's like in Facebook when you have to pass so many interviews.
Yeah.
Or you can just go into some more simple and small companies and try with that them. It doesn't mean that it's easier. Because, for example, for us, we have very challenging tasks and try just to get the best. And so many auditors from other top tire companies try to become auditors at Exorio, but they didn't pass our tests. So, yeah, but you can find there are quite a lot of audit companies. And if you have your experience, proved experience in some bug bounty companies, so you can try. That's the way. So learning, then try bounty, and then just apply for audit companies. Looks easy.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds easy, but I think it's not. You mentioned ConsenSys, actually, so I will probably leave a link up here for episode 16 where I talked to Emily Lin. She's actually a developer relation at Linea. Linea is a ConsenSys company. So for people who are interested in learning how she got into Web3, yeah, so the story link is up there. Anyway, I'm curious now, can you elaborate a bit more, like what are some of the tests you give to, you don't have to say, I mean it depends on whatever you can disclose, but like what do they have to do to become an auditor in your company? Do they take it from tests, coding tests, or?
First we mostly look how the person thinking and how he analyzed the code. We provide some code with the issues, and we, of course, it's good if he can find all the issues, but most important then we see on which aspects he bring attention and how the auditor thinks. Also, we need to check like vibe check. It's also important things because it's very important that it will be comfortable to work with this person, because as we are not a solo auditors, we are a team, and it's very important that everyone on the same vibe. So yeah, this is also important.
So in the test, is it a TAM test? Like do they have to do it with you watching, or is it like a take-home test type of thing?
Usually we give some time to prepare with the code at home, and then we start to analyze everything live. Sometimes we can ask like additional questions or provide some extra lines of code to check. But yeah, in general, because of course we understand that not everyone are comfortable just to audit when people
being watcher. Yeah.
So we try different approaches and allow everyone to provide what they can put on the table in their own way. Something online, something offline.
I see. Yeah, and I think that makes sense because I don't know. I'm not a big fan of the whiteboard test. Sometimes like being put on the spot with some very difficult questions, you know, and then you just blank out, right? But then even though you might know how to do it, but then you just blank out and maybe it doesn't come to you at that moment. So yeah,
exactly.
Take home is a bit fairer. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's nice to combine this. So we give them code for a home. It's small amount, of course, so they can easily understand it. And then we can discuss. And I think nice criteria for everyone who we hired there was interesting that they can share with you something that you didn't know yet. So everyone, even like junior auditors, when they come to us, sometimes during the discussion of the code, they provide some information, and even senior auditors say, oh, wow, that's a cool idea, or something like this. And this is a good criteria that we will get onboarded this guy. So, and this is how much their clicks. That they are always that we learn from each other. And that's why like my team are really happy and work inside, and they are share with me that they are like that. They are in a good team, and they are sharing and improve their skills by working with other cool people. So that's what we try to build, like small but very friendly and high professional team.
Yeah, that's awesome. Actually, I like that. Yeah, I like that, how you making this a very much a learning focused culture, right? And then people joining together, maybe joining hackathon. I mean, I also met one of your employees at the hackathon. That's how I get to know about your company, actually, right? Mm-hmm. So that was very fortunate coincidence. Yeah. Exactly. So
yeah, awesome. we also participate in hackathons for like we went to ETH Istanbul and also won the hackathon. My team actually, not me. I didn't participate in that much. I mostly participate in the like lectures and check some new features for ZK. But they built some ZK bridge between different layers for voting and won. One more hackathon.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think they must be living up to your legacy, right? Because you told me you've been to like, what, 13, 14 hackathons and you won every time. So obviously your team is going to be living up to you, right? But also I think it means that like whoever, either me or whoever else go to the hackathon and then we in the same room with you, we know that, okay, well, we should either join your team or like somehow bribe your team, right? otherwise your competition is way too fierce for us.
But most important is just a vibe. We like to just have fun.
No, hackathon, super fun. Yeah, I think also it's like the one of the best way for me to learn new technology, make some new friends, try some local foods, and use some new products. Yeah. The best thing, of course, like hackathon, very limited time. So obviously, whatever my team usually build, I'm pretty sure we have a lot of issues. If you do an audit for that, I'm quite sure there'll be plenty of issues. But anyway, yeah, because you can't really build a solid, like, secure product in 48 hours, right? Exactly. Yeah. Or like 36 hours. It's not even 48, 36 hours.
Yeah. So hope to see you in the next hackathon.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think this year I'll be attending some more hackathon as well. Awesome. And final question, where can people follow you in particular, Peter, and also where can people find your company? Feel free to share and any links. You can say it out loud here, and then I'll make sure to put it in the show notes.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I will provide all the info.
Awesome. Yeah, so once again, thank you for your time today. It's been awesome talking about Web3 security and audits. It's been really awesome. Looking forward see you sometime soon. Yeah.
Cool, quite awesome. Interesting. Thank you. Thank you for your time. Yeah.
And we are back to my studio. So I think there was a lot of interesting learnings in this episode for everyone, including tips on how to stay safe and some particular guidance from Peter on how to become an auditor, if that's something you're interested in. If you enjoyed this episode, please give a like and subscribe, because it would mean a lot to me. For the next episode, we'll be talking to Ali Marhabji. He is a managing partner at Blockchain Founders Fund. It is a venture capital or VC, the Web3 world. It's a very interesting episode that you don't want to miss. Once again, thank you for listening and see you next time.